Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to The Discourse, a short-form, one-on-one interview podcast with filmmakers, actors, and other film industry folks, brought to you by The Playlist and hosted by myself, Mike D'Angelo. Today, I'm going to get real weird with it and talk about A24's eccentric and fantastical comedy, Problemista, the Julio Torres film, which is currently in limited theaters and expands nationwide on March 22nd, follows Alejandro, played by Torres, as an aspiring El Salvadorian toy maker who basically loses his job at a cryogenic freezing company and falls in with a New York art world outcast played by Tilda Swinton in order to maintain his work visa and grow into the person he was meant to be. The film, which is great, stars Greta Lee, RZA, Isabella Rossellini narrates it, and much more. Joining me to discuss the film is director and star Julio Torres and his co-star, the great Tilda Swinton. Julio wrote on SNL for around 5 years or so and also ran and starred in the show Los Espookies for Max. I highly recommend checking out that series for those who aren't familiar and love kind of absurdist, heartfelt humor. Tilda Swinton, of course, you know Tilda from her many films with Wes Anderson, or Michael Clayton is a personal favorite of mine. She played the Ancient One in Doctor Strange. She was Gabriel in Constantine. She was recently in David Fincher's The Killer. Too many great roles to name, quite frankly, and Problemista is no different. Yes, it's an absurd, fantastical comedy, but the piece that really brings it together for me is this huge amount of heart and warmth that peeks through more and more as the film goes on. During our chat, we discuss the many elements of the film that make it unique, the real-life story that inspired it. We go into Tilda's career, we go into SNL, we go into Constantine 2. There's really a lot of good stuff to dig in here. But before I shoot you over to the interview, I've got to tell you that The Discourse is a part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes The Playlist Podcast, Bingeworthy, Deep Focus, and more. We can be heard on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you find your favorite shows. Be sure to subscribe or drop us a comment or a rating, as we do very much appreciate it. Or just head on over to theplaylist.net for film and TV news, interviews, reviews, and more. Okay, here is my chat with the wonderfully unique and marvelously talented duo of Julio Torres and Tilda Swinton. Julio, Tilda, it is an absolute pleasure to speak with both of you. I have seen Problemista twice now, so obviously thoroughly enjoyed it. Congratulations on getting it finally out here. I know it's been waiting for a little bit. A lot of this is like a warped, surreal version of your life, Julio. When did it become, because you have experience in TV and all these different areas. When did it become like, I want to make this a movie?
I never really know the medium of something when I'm playing around with an idea, but this idea kept expanding, and then it felt like in the abstract, I did want to make a movie at some point, and this kept coming up, but I didn't quite, because I knew, I sort of like on paper understood that I had a interesting experience, an interesting sort of like life chapter that could make an interesting movie, or they could make a movie that people would want to see. But that wasn't enough for me to be excited to write it. And it wasn't really until I realized that I could make it in the same way that I had been making everything else, which was with the use of the fantastical and like breaking it a little bit, that I was like, oh, okay, got it.
There was a version where it would be just like
without the fantastical elements?
That version was never put on paper.
Okay.
But there were little scribbles in a notebook, and that felt so tedious to me because it, and it's like, you know, I you know, I had people around me being like, oh my God, that would make such a cool movie. So and it's just like, well, everyone thinks they have an interesting life that would make such a cool movie. And I didn't want to make a sad little biopic or like something like that. And it wasn't until I was really starting to play with it that I was like, oh, I see. This.
So how do you pitch it then? Either to a studio or to Tilda or, you know, someone you want to, well, come on. It's a lot to wrap your head around.
It is a lot. You know, I'm very lucky. I consider myself very lucky that at that point, I already had work to show for, and I had, whether it's like the shorts I made for my job at Saturday Night Live or Los Espookys or the My Favorite Shape special, there was already just enough out there to give people a sense of what I was going for, and also, frankly, with a lot of people, give them the confidence that even though they might not understand it, know that it would work.
So Tilda, where do you come in all of this? Did you already know each other, or was this kind of the first part of your relationship?
We didn't know each other personally. I knew of Julio's work and I loved it. I think the first thing I saw was My Favorite Shapes and then Los Espookys.
In which you referenced, right?
In My Favorite Shapes.
Yeah.
How did you know?
I just
exactly
knew.
My apartment's like. And he sent me this, I mean, first of all, untitled Julio Torres script. Yes, I'm going to read that. That was an amazing and beautiful day. And then I read this kind of perfectly formed thing. And then we spoke on over the Zoom. It was 2020. It was the end of 2020. It was sort of still a bit COVID-y. And we spoke. And I would say, my friend, we pretty much loved each other from the moment we started speaking. Yeah. And I needed a little persuasion that there were good reasons why he had this fantasy for me to play in it. But I was a bit of a pushover, and I finally, you know, quite quickly rolled into it. And then we just Zoomed for a year before we actually met in the flesh. We met in the flesh when I came to start shooting in the production office. But by then we knew each other really very well, and we developed Elizabeth, and we were ready to roll at that point.
Yeah, you two seem very much made for each other in that you both have very unique voices as artists. I'm wondering, like looking back, just as a person, it's sometimes not as obvious, you know, what shapes you. And then you start, you know, introducing, you know, things you grew up with to your kids, or maybe you start looking back at certain things that you really loved as a child and realizing how much certain things shaped you. So I'm wondering what some of those things might have been for both of you.
Mm.
Oh, that's interesting. Do you find yourself introducing things to your kids because they were important to you when you were?
One of the, for me, blissful things about having kids was it was an opportunity to cherry pick all the good things about my childhood and leave all the rest, which is a wonderful thing. You do have that option. You know, every time they're up at three and you're not yelling, get down, you feel like you won something. But also you remember all your favorite books, you remember all your favorite films, and you just force feed them like lab rats. And they come out really well in my case, I'm lucky to say. Yeah, I think something that I really love in this friend of mine that feels so natural to me is the playfulness. It's such a, like, it's a warm water that I swim in anyway. And so to meet someone who's, you're such a immediate compadre is just delicious. And that felt, and it did feel, and I hope this doesn't sound winsome, but it's such a great way to work, great way to make work in that space of playfulness and collective trying to delight each other and finding it easy to delight each other. It's a great way to start. And you can really take risks and do things that you may not be clear about and push it a little too far. And you know that it's all right because you know your friend's going to say, actually, maybe bring it down a little bit, or actually keep going. And you go, really? And he says, yeah, go for it. And you just do because you think he might be right. And
yeah,
crack, you know, just for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sense of play is something that I think that going into the project, I was doing it. I had already been doing it, but I didn't really understand just how important it was to me and the way that I like making work. And then in retrospect, it really, really felt like working with Tilda felt no different than working with like my peers in Brooklyn that I've sort of like developed with.
Mm-hmm.
That we are all championing each other and humoring each other, and we are doing things because they feel interesting and fun, not because we want that thing to get us the other thing, to get us the other thing, to get us the other thing.
Yeah.
And we are just chasing after making something fun and making it in a way that's enjoyable. That's
mm-hmm.
really how Los Spookies was made. It was such a joyful experience, and making this movie was as well.
And so much of it, like you've been saying, is based on these real life events of yours, whether it's the Craigslist jobs or like the green card craziness or some of these toy ideas and inanimate objects that you kind of fixate on. With the characters like Elizabeth, Tilda's character, was she based on someone specific, or did you kind of collaborate and create her together?
She is an amalgamation of entities. Yes.
Not to be named.
She is a
reasons.
She is.
Although we've already worked out that if anybody were to sue because they were to claim that Elizabeth was based on them, it wouldn't be a very good look. So I hope that we're in the clear there.
And I also will say that.
But the people who are based on will probably relish that.
Yes, but I will say that I have a lot of love for the difficult and complicated people that inspire me. So I have always had a hard time with making work about things or people I dislike.
Yeah, yeah.
Making work out of like resentment.
No, you're throwing shade here, actually. You can't because it is actually a portrait of, as I keep saying, it's a romance, and it's a great love story about two people who end up saving each other.
Right.
You know what it is? I'm not interested in finger pointing.
Mm.
I'm not interested in saying you did wrong and here's my take on that.
Mm.
Right. I am more interested in you made me feel that way. Why did I feel that way? And what compelled you to behave in that way that made me feel that way?
And aren't you ridiculous?
And just
just kind of delighting in the specificity of everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of not, yeah, like you said, not pointing a finger at it, but you know, embracing it. There's like even the through line joke of Tilda's phone light being on the whole time.
Yes.
So my kind of specific ridiculous kind of thing. I love those kind of silly
and
jokes.
The carrying around of the empty
yep.
water bottle, which I sent Julio a photograph. When I was in the passport queue 2 days ago coming into the States, I realized that I had got off the plane. So I'm getting all my things and I managed to include essential object, passport, phone, bag, an empty water bottle, and I have it clutched in my fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm walking all through the airport, all the way through this interminable. And why do I have it? And I realized it's because I'm coming to the Problemista premiere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Elizabeth was coming back.
Elizabeth was coming back.
On the rise.
Yeah. That was one of the things I was thinking about. She's like a muscle that's always tense.
Yes.
Never relaxes.
Yes.
And
she's a knot in your back.
She's never comfortable.
Yeah. Even though she says she's perfectly comfortable, you know, whether that is. But how do you occupy that headspace for so long and not be absolutely exhausted, or were you just like exhausted by the end of the day?
Kind of the latter. I mean, it was, we kept pushing it. Every day we pushed it more. And I think what happened was every day, I would sort of go home relatively, not very eye-catching in the street. Have a perfectly nice evening, go to sleep, get up in the morning, come back into work. And in a way, I would have sort of dialed it down a bit because you sort of, it all retracts. And then we had to tease it out again. You had to pump me up again. You had to go further and further. And every day we
Oh,
went a
okay.
little further
Yeah.
because we had to, because there was some innate part of my,
Being that was
sympathetic
just like,
nervous system that just went,
well, I can't sustain
I can't sustain
this.
this, surely. But
Yeah.
it was, we thought, in what I did, I thought we were doing something really extreme, but clearly not. I mean,
I know people like this.
every other person, every person actually we have spoken to today, in your position, has said that they've been triggered by mention of FileMaker Pro and that they've worked with somebody like Elizabeth.
FileMaker Pro.
There you go. Did you are you are you touched by that particular wound?
Not the program itself, but the specificity of the argument of it, and the absolute ridiculous refusal to not even to just even try to learn it. Yeah,
Yeah.
that I identify with a lot. There's also like these like really crazy internal thoughts that you visualize, whether it's the costume segments between your characters or the visa process, just visualized out in that, like he's coming up into these different rooms that are exactly the same. So were they always envisioned to be what they ended up being, or was that something where you get there on the day, or you get there like, you're coming up to it and you kind of like switch?
No, well, I mean, broadly, no, because those things take so much
Yeah,
time to
exactly.
think. But then there was some room to play in the movement and the staging and the choreography a little bit, that I didn't expect the maze, the bureaucratic limbo, as we call it, to be as fun as it was when I
Yeah.
shot it. And then the cave was a lot of like finding it on the day. But I mean, we obviously had the cave and we had the costumes and all these things, and it was, yeah, I don't know. There was always, I like to think that we went into the shoot very prepared with just enough room to play.
Yeah, but you write this, you direct this, you star in this. There comes a point where people might be like, 'cause the lead character is you, but he isn't you. A lot of people would just be like, I'm just going to make the character as close to me as possible. That's one less thing I have to worry about. I can just be myself. Where do you go? No, Allie's going to be very different or have this very specific walk. Like, where do you develop stuff like that? And where do you decide, like, I want him to be as
Well, I
specific as
think it, I
possible?
actually think it really, really, really helped that his clothes are so comfortable. I do, I really do. The fact that he's wearing sneakers and a very, very relaxed fit, and the hair took no time. The makeup took no time. So then it felt like, if I genuinely like making the movie, I felt like I was, it felt like a very comfortable place to direct a movie from, because it was comfortable. It gave me a sense of wonder. It gave me, I think, humility, which I think it's necessary for that job. And I know it was great. Like when I think back on my looks on Los Espookys, for example, I
Yeah.
don't think I could have directed that, or not as easily, wearing basically like being like this like walking Christmas tree of a like.
But he's the object in, and you are the protagonist. You are the avatar. You're the audience's avatar. We're looking through your eyes as
Yes,
Alec,
yeah.
and so what you do, and that sort of task is a very particular one, and it means you have to kind of sustain a kind of spirit for the audience that they feel comfortable with you to look through your eyes. It is strenuous, but in a different way. But you are he is the protagonist, but he's looking at everything else. and but he needs
he's collecting data.
He's collecting data, but for the audience to want to look through your eyes, mm-hmm. you have to kind of set up an atmosphere that they want to be looking through your eyes. It's
you know, someone actually brought up the trailer for the movie earlier, and I really love what A24 did with the trailer.
The phone call one?
I haven't seen it.
The one with the New York, New York song.
Oh, okay.
And the reason why I thought, like, one of the very small directions that I gave him was, instead of trying to summarize the movie or sell it as X, Y, and Z, it should be about seeing this world through the eyes of Alejandro.
Mm-hmm.
That unlocked something.
Exactly right.
That I thought was very fertile.
Yeah.
When it comes to Elizabeth, actually, a lot of the characters are really heightened, and you could easily get lost in just kind of going more and more and more and more and more. How do you maintain their humanity? Because there's these little moments of humanity that are so beautiful and so effortless that you're just like, oh, I see her. Like, oh, she's, I see who she is.
It was really important to us that she was everything at once. And it was a really wonderful opportunity to do that. And we reference often the work of Hayao Miyazaki, that his so-called villains, or people who present as villains, obstacles and challenges to the protagonist at the beginning of Miyazaki's films, end up being nurturing and actually saviors. Because we get to know them more and we see why they were exhibiting monstrous behavior, and we begin to feel them then suddenly being generous. And you go, oh, and then it's on you for going, oh, I made the mistake of assuming that person was not capable of generosity or was too solipsistic to think about somebody else's feelings. And it's a wonderful trick to turn. And there was a great opportunity to do that in this with Elizabeth. I believe, and this is in Julio's writing, it really works well that it's so unexpected. It's unexpected for Alejandro, and of course it's unexpected for the audience, that at the end of the day, we miss her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're rooting for her.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he needed her, like absolutely
he totally
needed her.
She saved him. She mm-hmm. gave him the key to his life. And that's why I think the future section at the very when they meet again is so thrilling, and why I call it a romance. It's a mm-hmm. love story, and when they find each other again in the future, it's really beautiful. And now they can enjoy the order.
At last, order will reign supreme at last.
There's so many little things within this. Like I imagine it had to be kind of strange to be redoing this warped version of your life, you know, directing it at times.
There was actually one specific moment that really sent me back, and my heart started racing. I was like, oh, this is what they mean when they use the word triggered. This is, I'm actually experiencing it. And it was, you know what it was? It was arranging the boxes in the storage room, the gray boxes in the storage room, where like Bobby was at the beginning of the movie, because it's like, oh no, they should look more like this, and I was like, and suddenly my heart was, and I was just like, oh, I need to stop doing
it. Been here before. Step away from the baby.
Yes.
There's also the Hasbro of it all. Like, were they just cool with you doing whatever? Because
we'll see.
We'll see.
They were really clever, Hasbro. Mm-hmm. They would bring out
the toys.
All our toys.
Yeah.
Or A24 do it. We're sitting in A24's offices. They would, and it's just going to be a race to the finish. Who's going to make more money out of the toys?
Awesome.
It'd be foolish not to.
Yeah, so you got to show them off on Colbert. So
as
obviously.
FileMaker, I don't know what FileMaker Pro will make of it.
We'll see. It's definitely going to see a resurgence. I assume the inevitable sequel, Problemista 2374, you know, is going to involve Elizabeth and Alejandro going back to resurrect FileMaker Pro in the future.
Yeah, trying to find a computer in the future that can still take FileMaker Pro.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, Tilda, you've been kind of known for some of these more what some might call experimental, very specific roles, but you recently said that some of these roles people would call, mainstream or blockbuster, or like the Narnia movies or Constantine or the Marvel movies. They've allowed you to be more experimental than a lot of things. So, could you expand on that a bit?
I suppose what I meant is that my sort of ground that I was grown in was long before films were called independent and were sort of money-making commodities. I worked in the experimental film world, which was closely aligned to the art world in London in the 80s and then the 90s. Principally with one filmmaker, Derek Jarman. I worked with him for 9 years until he died of AIDS in 94. And when he went, I'd had 9 years of a life and, developing a way of working collectively and a kind of performance, which was completely experimental, usually silent, improvised, and not industrial, and certainly not professional, and certainly not acting. So I was sort of high and dry at that point. And slowly, I made alliances with other filmmakers who wanted to work with me in the independent sector. And then, very few times in my life, I mean, I've been working for over 30 years, but I think about 5 times I have been asked by a big studio to make a film, but primarily by a filmmaker who is on an experimental sort of gig themselves. So, for example, Constantine, which was the first big movie I was asked to be in, was Francis Lawrence doing something highly experimental. I mean, all those sort of ice cube, glass shards coming out of the sky in Constantine. These were all new computer programmers, and it was really exciting. And for me, it was not that far from doing a Pet Shop Boys video with Derek. It was all experimental. And when a filmmaker says you're going to play the Angel Gabriel and massive wings are going to come out of your back, I mean, that's my world.
Sign me up.
The fact that this time it was under a studio who had millions of dollars to achieve it was even more exciting. I mean, I'm a nerd and I was always amazed at the studio system and interested to know how it worked. And to go into the studio system with really experimental minds like Francis Lawrence or David Fincher. When we made, I was first worked with Fincher and on his Benjamin Button film, and that was highly experimental.
Very,
It was the
very,
first
very,
film
very
when they were
experimental.
making, Brad Pitt look 19 and all the rest of it, and people would run onto the set at lunchtime with these fabulous geeks with the
Prosthetic.
computers. No, saying look and show something that they just managed to do in the computer to make somebody look, and it was really, really interesting. And Fincher is, as you almost certainly know, as a super cine geek and loves all that. And I love all that alongside him. So, and then the Narnia film was experimental for Andrew Adamson. He'd only ever made animated films. And he said, I want to make a live action film. I don't know what I'm doing. Do you want to come? And I went, yeah. You always felt those films feel more experiments for me than, being at home
Sure.
in the garden with a home movie camera ever did. Because that was my starting point. So it's a really good thing to know that I always remember once Björk was asked about, whether electronic music was soulless, and she said, "Well, you'd have to put the soul into it, and then it isn't." And to go into a big studio picture and find really interesting minds is just a thrill. And there are lots of them, and I've been very lucky to work with some of them, and to believe that it's possible to make something that big, and to make it hang together, which is so improbable, especially when things are put together so often by committee in those big scenarios. I don't know, it's kind of fascinating magic to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually just speaking with the Kiva Goldsman recently about Constantine too.
Oh,
And he said
it's happening,
Keanu and
isn't it?
it
And
is
it's
happening.
Keanu. I heard a rumor Keanu was playing Gabriel.
Really?
I don't know whether. The thing is, I have to tell you something funny. When I come through, when people kind of recognize you for your work,
Of
when I
course.
come through airports, you can sort of tell when people are coming. Wherever you're walking, you can sort of tell. If I'm in somewhere in the Upper East Side, people come towards me, it's probably Orlando or Jim Jarmusch or something like that. If
Who
I'm
said
in
it before?
airports, it's
Narnia.
Constantine.
It's
No, it's Constantine.
Constantine.
I don't know why.
Ah.
I don't know whether all the airports around the world play it to their security staff.
That's it. Work
But
at
they,
that.
yeah, I'm going through the X-ray,
Okay,
and
wait.
my
You know
tray
what
is
I think it is? You know what I
going,
think it is?
and they go like this. Those are my wings.
You know what I think it is?
What?
I think that, well, Constantine is technically an action film,
It is an action film.
and the being a TSA agent is sort of like police adjacent.
Yes,
So then
it
you grew up liking like action gun movies.
And I suppose I spend more time around airport security staff than police officers. Maybe
Fair.
if I hang
Yes,
out
of
with police
course.
officers, they might also.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's interesting. So what's happening with it?
I just told he said he's writing it right now with Keanu and Francis. I was wondering if you were popping back in.
Well,
They
she's
haven't
asking
rung me
questions,
up
so
either.
yeah.
No, I know they. I've still got my wings. I'm
Yeah, they're
available.
still here.
Yeah, they're still here.
Yeah.
Talk, talk, talk.
Julio, I'm also a massive SNL fan. I watch it every week. Granted, usually the next day because I have kids and I
Of
need
course.
sleep. I'm kind of interested in how your unique sensibility was welcome there, how your experience was there in like that high pressure environment. Did you enjoy that? Were you miserable there? Did you feel welcomed?
You know, it's very much, it's a job that's very choose your own adventure. And I didn't set out to like work in this way, but it just ended up happening where if I wasn't doing something that I was very interested in, I was just not doing anything. I was just sort of like waiting around. And I think that is so lucky because I thought, what would be the point of me working here to do things that I don't, that I'm not like proud of or attached to, or I think that I sort of approached it in retrospect in that maybe a healthy way of thinking like, well, I have nothing to lose. If they don't like me, they don't like me. If what's the worst that can happen, that they fire me? I don't know. Like I don't like and of course they did it. I felt very embraced there. But I think that I went in there doing the only thing I know how to do, which is just marching at the beat of my own drum, and some people want to see me march and some people don't, and that's completely fine.
Yeah, they're giving me the rap. I will, shout out the sink, shout out, Papyrus. Those are
Oh, thank you.
amazing classic SNL moments. But for our listeners, I'll just say Problem Mista hits limited theaters on March 1st and nationwide on March 22nd. It's truly a unique, good-hearted, wonderful experience. Loved both of you in it. And again, truly a pleasure to speak with you today. I
Thanks,
really
thank you
Mike.
so much.
Thanks.